Welcome to the Empowered Homes Podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to be a resource to connect church and home by growing strong families.
Hey, it's Bobby. On today's episode, we got a special guest. I'm telling you, it is a special one. We have Chip Dodd on the podcast, and Chip is a counselor and consultant, mentor. And if you don't know that name, you got to stop right now. Go Google some of Chip Dodd's work. He's got a ton of books. But Chip, his life is about helping people understand their heart, understand their feelings, understand who they are so that they can live out true fulfillment in everyday stuff of life. And specifically, how do we know ourselves, know our feelings, know our heart so that we can live as parents, as spouses, as friends to those around us in relationship the way God designed it. Chip's just incredible. He's got a ton of great resources. You will be blessed by this podcast. If you want more information about Chip, there's some link to this description as well as all over empoweredhomes.org. So today on the podcast, we have a special guest, Chip Dodd. Chip Dodd is a counselor, mentor, a consultant for so many people. He's been doing incredible things for so many people around the world. And he's written several books, The Voice of the Heart, speaks to the importance of feelings and as a tool and gift for us. He does seminars all over to impact people's lives. He's written tons of books, The Perfect Loss, Needs of the Heart, Keeping Heart, Anthems to the Invisible, and Parenting with Heart. Chip, we are so thankful to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bobby. It's great to be with you guys. Great to be with you. I love what you're doing, too. As you've explained, you know, the thematic purposes and the mission of what you are doing. I love it. And I'm so grateful and honored to be on with you guys today.
Oh, man, it's a joy to just have you on the phone, and so thankful for what you're doing. And, you know, where are you located right now?
I am in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Okay.
It's kind of like Katy, Texas, sort of.
Yeah,
we're a lot bigger.
Yeah. So are
you like about 20,000 or so?
Yeah. I mean, we're growing every day. We've got houses popping up every day. It's crazy how fast we're growing right now, but
yeah, Murfreesboro was at 30,000 when I left here to go work and be educated. And, 82, I came back and we were already at 100,000.
Wow.
So it's grown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We in growing places. Well, before we jump into some content to help our folks, our listeners, Chip, tell us a little bit about, you know, your family and who you are.
Well, I tell you, let's see. I have two grown sons. One is in the same field I'm in, and the other one is a bar past attorney who he said he has no intention of practicing law. So I'd like to see what that's going to be. And then my other son, Tennyson, who is has his master's degree in theological studies and has a master's degree in social work. So he's doing therapy in Nashville today, and I'm here in Murfreesboro. So, you know, I had a great experience just recently. My son, the youngest son, asked me to become licensed so I could marry him and his fiance.
Wow.
And it's one of the great, great experiences of my life. It was funniest thing, Bobby. My oldest son was the best man, and William, my youngest son, was the one I was marrying. And my oldest son had a handkerchief for William when he started to cry. It turns out I'm the one that started crying.
Mm-hmm.
I had to take the handkerchief.
Oh, man.
So it's really funny, really funny. And then I handed it back at the end of the ceremony, and my oldest son said, "No way, it's yours now. It's yours. It's on you now." So it was a great experience. But they are two men that I admire, and it means to mirror. It's like I like them so much. I want to be like them. So I'm very grateful. And their mom, Sonia, has been a prayerful, loving presence in their lives, who had to shift from being a mama And I remember telling her, both kids were beginning to say, you know, I don't need to hear from you anymore. And I remember telling her, I said, look, you know, your mama rolls over. You're a mother now. She was like, oh, no, this is terrible. It's like, as she made that shift when they were 19 and 20, it's been amazing how their relationship with her has flowered when she gave up one role and took on another one. You know, wow. Her career is being the mama of control, advice, yeah. Telling them what to do was over. So we're doing good. We're doing good. I'm grateful. Both of them are married, thank God, and both of them are healthy, thank God. And they're on their way to contributing, being of service.
Wow.
You know, so I'm glad.
That's so awesome.
And yeah, so that's a long, little bit of a long story, but yeah, that's us. And we grew up, as William said at rehearsal day, we grew up fighting, arguing, struggling, laughing. And he said, but I always believed that happened because we spent so much time together. And I really believe y'all always wanted us with you. So, of course, we fought. We were together all the time. So that was good.
Yeah.
Imperfect, imperfectly imperfect.
So good. And how long have you been married?
I have been married since 1983. I can count. Let's say that's 37 years.
Wow.
Yeah. That's... And you know what? I married. We started dating at the end of my high school. So we were high school sweethearts too. So
wow.
So we've known each other a long, long time.
Been together for a while. That's so awesome. Well, yeah. Again,
in fact, long enough that when I say something about her father and it was your father's fault, kind of thing. She says, I've been with you a lot longer than I was with him. I'm like, oh, shoot.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Me and my wife have been married 14 years and we're starting to talk about, you know, we're about to be together longer than we've been apart. And
yeah,
it's something cool to kind of see that. And you got your PhD in counseling from North Texas. I almost went to North Texas to play football, but I got a better.
Did you really?
I got a better scholarship.
What position would you play?
I would have been playing offensive line. So it was a big old
really?
Boy. Yep.
So you're a big fella. You got it. You know, you're a big fella. You got a nice soft voice, so that's good.
Well, thank
you. You fool people.
Yes. Yes. Oh man. Well, Chip, so thankful for you and just your life and ministry, what you've been doing and helping folks all over the world. And today, I just wanted to pick your brain on a few things, especially with the climate and current context of just our world with the pandemic and the election and just all of those things. And you've written a lot about, you know, the individual. And so in the midst of all of, you know, the stuff, the minutiae and all the life and all the craziness. What do you think what do you think is at the root of the worry and struggle that is on people's mind right now?
You know, it's a great question. Big question. We could do the whole podcast on that, but even as we like start with where we came from, you know, when an infant comes into the world, and this addresses COVID and addresses really leading with heart and everything. But when an infant comes into the world, the medical professionals do this thing called the APGAR. It's APGAR. And it's an acronym that's actually named after the obstetrician that started it. But there are three primary things that the medical professionals or midwives are looking for. And they actually are saying, will the baby cry out? Which means, will the baby feel and will the baby experience need? And then will the baby reach out, which they kind of have a sense of what they're looking for, or really who they're looking for. And then will the baby take in? Will the baby crave life, crave food? And what's amazing is the child's secondary craving is food. The first craving is connection with the caregiver.
Wow.
Which I think is so powerful.
Wow.
But what's amazing is that the baby can't think. And the baby can't talk, but the baby knows exactly what to do. And I think, to me, it just profoundly speaks about how we're God created and that human beings are created to find fulfillment in relationship. We're DNA coded to find fulfillment relationship, ultimately with ourselves, others, and God. So what's astounding is this baby comes out of the womb feeling and needing and hungering for connection. And remember, let's say it's not a cognitive experience. it's an inward, inborn experience, which points to that we're created as emotional and spiritual creatures, created to live fully. But we can't do so unless we're eating the relationship of, we're eating relationship with ourselves, others, and God. So, and then on top of that, Bobby, it turns out that as the brain develops, it develops from the back to the front. Basically, the, you know, we call it the reptilian brain. And then there's a brain called the heart or the limbic system. And it's your feeling center, your attachment center. And then we develop the thinking brain or the frontal cortex. And it turns out the proverb that says, as a person thinks or as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. What's astounding is neuroscience has proven once again the Bible to be accurate and true and wonderful. And we've always known it, that one of the main purposes of the frontal lobe, the thinking brain, is to speak what's happening in our hearts and tell the truth about it so we can stay connected. Because it's our hearts that feed, it's through our hearts we feed each other, and not through just our skills or our logic or our reasons. It's food for human beings is heart connection. So back to COVID, one of the things that COVID has done is separated us, especially in the beginning, from being connected. And it's proving that social media and Zoom and Ring Central and FaceTime and Facebook, it's good, but it's not best. That we're literally made to be in each other's presence, to see each other, touch each other, experience each other, because the computer cannot even keep up with how fast the human heart and brain move. So we've broken in connection for relationship, intimacy, and fulfillment. And so that isolation and that separation is taking its toll on us, because when humans aren't connected, stress goes up. When humans aren't connected, tension, isolation, loneliness, franticness, need for self-cure, frustration tolerance goes up. I mean, the list goes just becomes almost all negative. And so, you know, we're seeing an increase in addiction, increase in overdoses, an increase in domestic abuse. And I think in so many ways, it's about we've lost connection with ourselves. Plus, I think we live in a society that is less intimate and less connected to God than perhaps societally we ever have been. And when COVID, a crisis hits, many of us in this society don't have a place to turn. And then also the church, we were separated from corporate worship, community worship together, which feeds us. So it's a long answer, but all of it's relational in its origin. When we're broken from relationship. And what's amazing is solitary confinement is considered the worst punishment that we can put on another human being, which means separated from relationship.
Yeah. And so we're coming out of a season where, you know, and we're still, many people are still in that season of being separated and not being able to be a part of that. And so, you know, thinking through the listener who is going, amen, like I feel that 100%, you know, what can churches do? What can we do to rekindle those connections? What are some things that you advise? Like, you know, if we can't get in front of each other, you know, is there something that you would say, hey, do this?
Yeah. And, you know, I love that because, you know, just because, you know, the social media and podcasts aren't the best, it doesn't mean they're not good.
Yeah.
And I think that what the church can do is what it's always done, that communicate in any means possible, communicate the inescapable nature of how God created us. We're made to hope, and that we're made to be together. And so the church can communicate how we could be together and how to keep hope. Everything from, you know, prayer over the internet, prayer over podcasts, skills like y'all do, where you're offering forms of empowerment, which is really, empowerment is another word for keeping courage. remaining strong and courageous, giving Bible messages that directly communicate related to where we live today. I don't mean being relevant, but I mean like the ancient paths. I mean, keep turning us towards the ancient paths. And I think there are four things that the church could really major in right now. The four, I think, four great promises of God. Number one is that God is with us, Emmanuel. And we are the Christians who are know this. It doesn't mean we won't struggle, but God is with us, even when it doesn't look like it. That God goes ahead of us, that he already knows. Even this election that just happened, God is sovereign over everything, including this country and what's happening in it. And so so God has gone ahead of us. He is already in our future, so we can go there with great hope. Number three is that God will never leave us, nor will he ever forsake us. And then he makes us strong and courageous. So I think the church, more than anything else, and almost those four things I named, that's basically out of Deuteronomy 31, where Moses is, exhorting Joshua about how to live the next years of his life. And Joshua's strength comes from Exodus 33, where Joshua would linger at the tent after Moses had left. So what's amazing is the church can call us to lingering at the tent, which means taking our hearts to the tent, and we offer our psalms, we offer our prayers, we offer our hearts, we offer our worship, we offer our celebration, we offer our grief. We bring God our complaints, because at that tent it said that God spoke to Moses as a friend to a friend. And so the church can exhort us to go to the tent. And the tent is where we really do draw our strength and courage. It's a spiritual feeding that occurs by us presenting our hearts, our emotional experience of our hearts, to God, who can touch us in it. And then other people need to know our struggles as we're going through them now.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I think the church can do, of the many things the church does, is that we can fight for ways to actually be together.
Yeah.
Mask up and show up outside. In fact, we started going back to church September. We mask, we separate, but we worship together, and it is, oh, Bobby, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's good. And I missed it.
Yeah.
And I think we're at a time when we need to remind each other, we have taken for granted, as a mundane thing, something that is absolutely life's blood, and it's oxygen. So
that's so good. I mean,
as soon as we can't get back to church, get back in that building, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, we're trying to, here in our context, and Katie, just trying to get as many opportunities for people to get back into church and what that looks like. And we're just trying to be courteous and cautious. We're not, you know, you got so many people on the far left and far right. It's polarizing, but here's what we are going to do. We're going to have opportunities, and in the opportunity, 100%, we're going to be cautious. We're going to be wise. We're going to do our due diligence. And we're going to be nice to each other. We're going to be courteous. We're going to be kind. And and just to recap what you said, those four things are so crucial. So if you're listening and you're like, man, I get it. I feel isolated and alone, and maybe all of this is causing anxiety within me, of just being reminded of those four things. God's with us. God goes ahead of us. God will never leave us or forsake us. And he will make us courageous in seeking that out. Those are... Oh man, that'll preach right there. That's encouraging. Yeah, that's so encouraging. Well,
and I want to remind, like you just said, I mean, to the listener, our strength and courage comes from going to the tent, from needing God and being emotionally vulnerable before God.
Yeah.
And the same with each other. We're made to share our needs and our strengths with each other, not just our strengths.
Yeah.
You know, we need each other. That's the APGAR. That's like how we're born. Hey, and Bobby, you know what's amazing? I just saw this the other week. When Jesus exhorts us in the Sermon on the Mount at Matthew 7, he literally says, basically saying, you do not receive because you do not ask, okay? Hmm. So it hit me the other day that Jesus says, ask and you shall receive, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened unto you.
Wow.
Well, it hit me. that's a grown-up version of how we're born. Like as babies, we cry out, which is saying ask. We're asking for somebody to address my needs, my feelings. Jesus says, ask and you shall receive. And then we reach out, which means seek. We seek the connection, the caregiver. And Jesus says, seek and you will find. And then knock and the door will be opened unto you. It's knock. We knock on the door where we're looking for something we don't have, like food. Wow. So what's amazing is Jesus is literally telling us after you're born, you grow up into who God created you to be. And we're created for our cry out, our reach out, and our taking in to become asking, seeking, and knocking. So the more we need, the more we can get. The more we get, the more we can give. Mm. Big time.
Big time. That's That's so good. And so thinking about the individual who may be struggling, you know, definitely that's a great starting place. And I feel like there's the hard part is even those listening, you may not feel that, but there's people around you that are feeling that. So maybe it's not necessarily I'm not feeling or struggling, but how do I be sensitive to see those around me that are, and how can I reach out to them? They may not want to reach out. They may not know how. They may be scared of what's going on, but we can find those ways to connect and give them a way to see God in action. And so, oh man, that's just so rich. Well,
yeah.
Shifting.
And we're being called out of our comfort zone.
Yeah.
And the 100%. Moment you can go back to church, don't get used to being in your pajamas or whatever you call it and having coffee at home. We're made to be together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't let comfort overcome the best.
Yeah. That's a good
and
word.
We're the world is a tragic place and COVID is pointing all of us to that place. I mean, we live in a tragic place, and God is faithful in the midst of it, but it's still tragic. We're on our way home. We're not home, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a good word. That's a good word. Well, I want to shift gears just a little bit on one of your books that you wrote, Parenting with Heart. And it's just if you are a parent of any kid of any age, if you got young kids, definitely you got to read this. It's just it'll change your home and the perspective of how you lead at home. If you got older kids, it may spark conversations that you never thought that you should have with your kids. But in the book, you talk about that parenting with heart is not parent-centric, it's not child-centric, but it's heart-centric. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, that's great. Heart-centric means you're facing how you're created for relationship, and you're never going to escape being a human being, and human beings are created to have to live feeling life and also doing life so they can have what they're made to have. So we're human beings who are created, like I said, based on how we're born. We're relational seeking creatures, and we're here to seek fulfillment. And life's going to hurt. It's going to be sad. It's going to be lonely at times. It's going to be full of joy. We're going to do guilty things. We're going to feel healthy shame or toxic shame. We're going to be angry. We're going to be fearful. So what children need to know is not how to overcome life, but how to live life. And so a parent has to be able to talk about, yeah, this hurts. That's sad. This is lonely. This is scary. Yeah, this is what you do with guilt. You seek forgiveness. So really what's amazing is children don't really, what they're asking parents is, tell me the story, older child, tell me the story about how you dealt with life on life's terms. And so if the parent doesn't know how they truly dealt with and processed and healed from the pain of life, or how they expressed the joy of life, then they can't teach their children how to live life. So, I mean, our ability to remember what it was like being a child is extremely significant to the health of the children we have, because you can't give what you don't have.
Exactly.
And so it's amazing. Heart-centric means that life is made to be felt and lived. Because what's astounding is, you know, if you just do life logically, that's what a machine does. if you do life with caring, that's what a heart does. Okay. And so children aren't looking for a machine or a robot. They're looking for a person. And a person is somebody who cares. And if you care, it means you feel. And if you love, it means you're going to get hurt. And so parents have to be able to, I'll just say, do feelings, or they can't really care for their children. So heart-centric is knowing that I am just an older version of the children I'm raising.
Wow.
I'm just an older version of somebody experiencing life. And I can tell you what it's like because I'm naming what it's like. I'm not running from it. I'm learning from it.
Wow. That's what it's a definite change in perspective of what we see and understand.
It really does.
Yeah. Yeah. Of the world, you know, the world's going to give you, here's 10 parenting tips on this. Here's 7 ways to do this as a dad or mom. And, and so this goes back to the foundational of, you mentioned Deuteronomy of Moses, kind of even in Deuteronomy 6, where Moses just lays it out there. Here's what it looks like. You parents love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then press it upon your kids. But you've got to understand your own heart. So what we've been saying around here is, like, we have to understand the baton that we've been handed, and good, right, and ugly, or good, right, and beautiful, whatever it is, that's the baton. Everything in our childhood that's been handed to us, you know, we're either going to just hand that same thing to our kids, or we're going to allow God to give us a different baton to hand to them, a baton
that's true,
centered on His values, on who He is. And so that's the challenge for us. And that's the change in perspective of understanding that it's not about the child. It's not about the parent. That's not the center. The center is the heart, not only our heart as parents, but also being able to go after the heart of our kids and not necessarily, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if our kid messes up, yes, we want them to change the behavior, but it's more important for us to understand the heart behind why they messed up or what they did. And so I think
what was your motive? What were you trying to get? What was it? What were you after to hear the child so that you can raise the child up in terms of how they're made?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, my mother, I think I was like third or fourth grade, and I said something really mean just to say it. You know, I was mad about something, and I said something really mean. Like, I may have even said, like, I hate you, or something like that.
Wow.
And I remember, you know, I was waiting for, like, okay, I laid down the gauntlet. I'm about to pay. And she stopped and she looked at me, and I remember this to this day. She said, "Chip, this is the first time I've been a parent. This is my first time to raise children. I don't know how to do it, so I need your cooperation in this." And I remember, like, almost like putting my hands down. It was a profound moment, like, oh, you're human.
Wow.
Oh, you're learning too. Oh, you're finding out how to live too. You make mistakes too, and you need my help. Oh, well, we're in this together. And it was an amazing thing. Her admission of being human and then asking for me to cooperate was profound, because it literally elicited in me the recognition of actually compassion.
Wow.
And so she was saying, this is what it's like for me, her own empathy, like, hey, I have pain too. I hurt too. I'm scared too. And that empathy allowed her to say, Chip, I get what you're like. You're a kid. You have the same feelings I do. Well, guess what? I have the same feelings you do. And so her empathy, her ability to feel her own feelings, actually allowed her to have compassion for me in a moment of real meanness. And then her compassion, her mercy towards me, awakened in me a willingness that I did not have before. I mean, I think I grew up a lot in that very moment. And she was just admitting her humanity. It strengthened me. It was good. It was a maturing. It matured me. Wow. It allowed me to be open to God and others. So,
man,
so it's not heart. It's not child centric, and it wasn't parent centric. It was heart centric. What she did, she just told me the truth appropriately.
Yeah.
She wasn't needing me to be a parent with her. She was needing me to be aware that she's learning about life too.
Man, that's so good. And that's a change of perspective that, you know, if you're listening, it's easier said than done, but I think a willingness to say, okay, God, show me my heart and show me my kid's heart and let me be about those things. And instead of, you know, focusing on the wrong things, and they're not bad things. They're just, they're not the center of what's happening. And so, man, that's just,
yeah, you know what? Yeah. Well, what a parent can do, Bobby, is a parent can ask himself or herself this question. It's from the Voice of the Heart book, but a parent can stay in contact with how to grow their heart. They can ask themselves, what am I feeling? You know, what's happening in my heart? And in the Voice of the Heart, it makes it real simple. There are only eight feelings, just like there are three primary colors. But, you know, there are eight feelings. What am I feeling? And then explore, where is this coming from? What's going on with me? And then who do I tell? And that's how a parent grows. And parents need parents so they can raise children.
Wow.
It's not parents need to just learn skills so they can, you know, manage their children. Parents need parents. Support with each other to share, hey, this is where I'm struggling. This is what I'm scared of. This is what's hurting. This is what's sad. This is what's wonderful. This is what's thrilling. So we can gain strength because we literally encourage each other. I mean, courage is in a bucket of supply. I mean, once it's poured out, you got to be refilled.
Yeah.
And so parents need to be able to identify what they're feeling, be able to explore it, where it's coming from, and then know who to tell. Tell somebody who can relate and understand. Because the parents need other parents to raise children.
Yeah.
It's not a silo job.
Yeah, not in the sense of I need other parents so that I can see them fail and make myself feel better about myself. I think that's a lot of times we're like, at least I'm not as bad as that dad, you know. But in the real sense of, man, I need to surround myself with other parents that we can share and help each other in this.
Man,
that's such a good word. And let me just recap that. I wrote it down. It's so good. What am I feeling? Where's this coming from? And then lastly, who do I tell? And I think, and not to speak for all dads, because I'm not all dads, but that last one is hard. You know,
as just
a dad myself, just speaking for me, not anybody else, but oh man, that's hard. Who do I tell? You know, do I tell my boss, or do I tell someone? You got to have that person, those other parents that you trust to be able to tell. But
that's so true.
Yeah,
it's true. Hey, and you know what? You remember Andy Griffith?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, there's one of the shows when Opie and Andy are in some warehouse, and there's somebody's come to hurt Andy and kill him, and they're squatted down behind some boxes in this warehouse. And Opie says to his dad, Paul, are you scared? And Andy Griffith says, yes, I am, Opie. I am scared. And I remember Opie looks at him like, wow, if you could be scared, I can be scared too. Because I thought if I was scared, I wasn't being brave. But gosh, Dad, if you could feel that way, then I can too. And it just means we need to pray. Or, gosh, yeah, I need to learn how to do something, or it's okay for me to be human. It's okay for me to be in need. And I think one of the biggest tragedies of, just our society, because this wasn't true in the Hebrew culture. This wasn't true of the psalmist. This wasn't true of King David. This was not true. But in our culture, feelings are associated with weakness instead of feelings that are connected with others where we get help, make us strong. So, I mean, I think it's such a tragedy that men are so insecure with each other that we don't help each other raise our sons, our daughters. So when they look at us, say, you scared? We can say, yeah.
Yeah.
But instead, we're practicing saying no.
Wow. That's...
And then that cuts our children off from our hearts and what they need more than anything. What your child needs more than anything from you is the story of your life and the feelings that go with it. Because they see you as success. They see you as success because you're older and you made it. So somehow they're saying, how did you do it?
Yeah.
And yeah. if you tell them being self-sufficient, not caring, and don't worry about it, and you gut through it, well, those are all true things in some ways.
Yeah.
But there's that's just half the story.
Wow. That's.
I remember my father telling me one time, I mean, I was on a football team in high school, and there were like 100 kids went out, and they didn't cut anybody. And at the end of the practices before the season started, there were 14 of us left. And one day, I mean, I had thrown up and fainted and everything, so they wouldn't let us drink water and those kinds of things. But
yeah.
I remember my father saying to me, "Hey, son, I'll tell you something. You don't have to do this." I'm thinking, well, I want to, but it's bad. But he said, "I want you to know there were sometimes at practice when I was playing," he said, "just sometimes I wanted to cry." He said, "I hurt so bad that I'd hide in the back of the line sometimes." And he was a fullback that actually got a scholarship offer to LSU. So, wow. I mean,
yeah.
There's nothing wrong with, you know, what he was doing. But he said he hurt so bad he wanted to cry. And I remember him telling me that instead of me using that to quit, I used that to be encouraged. Gosh, if he did it, he made it, wanted to cry. Wow, maybe I can stay one more day. And I look back on that time, and I was very grateful that I stayed. I got to be one of 14. Also, you know what? If I had been one of the 100, I think the same father would have said, "Son, it's okay. You got a lifetime to learn how to live."
Yeah.
Because you're going to have things that hurt and are scary. It's okay, son. You're all right. Mm. I know you're sad, but I want you to know you got a home to come to. I'm not disappointed in you. And by the way, that's one of the things, if there are any nevers with your children, never, ever tell a child you're disappointed in them.
Wow.
Because if you look at what the word means, it means you no longer have an appointment. That means that they look at the list and you're not on it.
Wow.
And that means I don't even know you. And basically you're invisible. So, I mean, it's a real vital thing. You can tell a child you're sad, you're angry, that you're so mad at them, you don't even want to look at them, but don't ever say disappointed.
That's a good word.
Yeah.
So good. Well, Chip, man, thank you for your time. And before we close, just, you know, if someone's listening and was like, "Man, I want more information about Chip," where can they find some information?
Yeah, you know, thank you. The chipdodd.com is my website. I really strongly recommend, like you did, Parenting with Heart book.
Yeah.
But the Parenting with Heart book is going to reference where all this stuff started, and it's the voice of the heart. So, and I know if you hunger for your children, then you need to know yourself. Mm-hmm. If you want good for your children, then you need to have yourself. You need to be able to speak out of yourself. And it's the heart of who you are that matters most to your children. So the voice of the heart is about that.
Yeah.
That God created us as feeling, needing, desiring, longing, and hoping creatures capable of living the Psalms, which is being able to live life on life's terms. So I just support people getting that book,
yeah.
The Voice of the Heart. I'm not trying to sell it, okay?
No, not at all.
I do believe in it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, look me up on chipdodd.com.
Yeah.
Just get some of the material, and there's the work y'all are doing, Bobby. Get into the podcast, because all of these things we're offering how to live information, and not out of our perfection, but out of our facing that we're all made to live in fellowship. We're all in the same boat, sailing to the same place as Christians. I mean,
yeah.
We need to be able to do it well.
So
The Voice of the Heart is a real important book for related to parenting with heart.
Yeah, and we'll tag all of that in the description of the podcast and your website, and we'll share all that. And we'll have it all available on empoweredhomes.org. Chip, thank you so much.
Oh, man, thank you, Bobby. Wish we had more time. I know. Always, as Sonia says, and my wife says, you're like Donkey on Shrek. You just start and keep going.
Oh, man. Well, we'll have to do it again. Hopefully, we'll have you back on soon. It'd be awesome.
Hey, Bobby, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for listening to the Empowered Homes podcast. For more content and information to connect church and home, please visit empoweredhomes.org.